What is a wife's respect? Appreciating his desire to work and achieve. And I want you to note in each of these, we're going to emphasize his desire, not his performance. We are emphasizing his inner spirit, not his outward performance, because he may fail outwardly. Get in tune with your husband's heart. Get in tune with his spirit. Get in tune with his deepest desires. That's his male nature. Because when you disrespect that inner man, you lose him emotionally. So appreciating his desire to work and achieve, appreciating his desire to protect and provide, appreciating his desire to be strong and to lead and make decisions. Now let me insert something here. Some women are thinking, well, what are you saying? That we aren't able to lead? That we aren't able to make decisions? What are you saying against us women? I'm not saying anything against women. I see women again personalize things. What are you saying against us? I'm not saying anything against you, because I'm saying something about your son. I'm not saying something against your daughter. But also let me insert something here on this point just to illustrate. We've done the CEO Forum for Focus on the Family twice now. Actually, three times. Fortune 500, Fortune 100. And several women in this thing have Fortune 100, 500 companies. But these women have all shared that when they come into the home, they want to be feminine. So in order for them to be treated like a woman, they need to treat their husband like a man. And they need to get in tune that they are off the charts with leadership, but they don't manage their husband in the home. You know, Margaret Thatcher, the great Iron Lady in England, you know, the Prime Minister, she was asked once, what do you do when you go home at times? She said, I have a good cry with my husband. She wouldn't cry in front of Parliament, not that lady. But she wanted to be fully woman in relationship to her husband. And if she wanted to be treated in a feminine way, then she had to make a decision to understand that he had a need to be treated like a man. And if you've got spiritual gifts of leadership and administration and your husband's got the spiritual gifts of mercy, guess who can take over in the home? And you're going to begin to send a message to him that you don't respect him as strong, as a leader, as being able to make decisions. And you've got to make a decision at this point to understand that he has a need. It's not just about the decision. It's about the message he thinks you're sending him, that you don't respect who he is. Just as times, there are going to be moments when even you're the strong female leader, you still want to be yielded. You still, women, even that femininity comes through, you just want to yield to him. You want to be held by him. You want to cry with him. If you want to be fully woman, then you need to understand that he has masculine needs. And you've got to make a decision. You're not to manage him, so to speak, in the home, even though you have gifted leadership. At least put it this way. Don't come across the way that he feels you're sending him a message. I don't respect who you are. Because he'll just die. Die. Also, appreciating his desire to analyze and counsel. Analyze and counsel. Appreciating his desire for a shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. And appreciating his desire for sexual intimacy. And we're going to look at these, and I put them under an acronym called CHAIRS. C-H-A-I-R-S. And why do I say CHAIRS? Just as a woman wants to couple, C-O-U-P-L-E, I believe that your husband feels the responsibility to die for you. He feels the responsibility to die for you. If a burglar comes into the house tonight and you're both in bed, he's not going to say, Sally, get him! Get him, Sally! He feels that responsibility. He feels himself responsible before God to chair the marriage. He sees himself in that role. I'm not saying he's good at it. I'm just saying that's his self-image, and that'll be your son's self-image. Now, each of these letters represents a biblical teaching. Each of these concepts, C-H-A-I-R-S, illustrates something very, very powerful. I want to begin with C, and it's called conquest. Doesn't that sound romantic? Conquest. Appreciating his desire to work and achieve. Listen to Genesis 2:15. The Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to cultivate and keep it. Again, Genesis 2:15. The Lord God took the man, this is Adam, and put him into the Garden of Eden to cultivate and keep it. This is in paradise. Is Eve created at this time? Yes or no? No, she's not around. So why did God create Adam? He created Adam to work in paradise. What's the first question that every man asks another man when they meet for the first time? What do you do? It's called the instrumentality of the male. Men have to have an instrument in their hands. You know, in fact, they've had little girls stand in front of a mirror like 5 years old, and they're videotaping her. She doesn't know it. There's nothing else in the room other than this floor-length mirror. And for 100% of the time, she'll talk to herself in the mirror. Then they bring a little 5-year-old boy into that room, right? Take her out, and he's in front of this mirror. What's he do? He starts talking to himself. Then suddenly he goes... We're back to the ceiling fan. You can put a little boy out on a pile of dirt and he'll watch those bulldozers for 2 hours. Little girls are running through the airports with dolls under their hands, not little boys. There's something within our nature.
That ceiling fan illustration, just, you know, he's talking about in the earlier DVD, he said with infants, they put a little infant girl and they lay the girl to bed and the girl will make contact with the person, whoever's there, and just keep eye contact and watch that person. And then they put a little infant boy and he'll make eye contact by that person until he sees the ceiling fan.
That God has done something, and it's not wrong, it's just different. And God has designed men to be in the field. He's designed women primarily to be in the family. Men are cursed in the field by the sweat of your brow. She's cursed in the family by pain in childbirth and tension in her marriage. Why? Because this is where in the field you receive honor and glory and significance. But all glory is fleeting and there will never be perfect respect. And in the home, this is where love can be derived. But paradise is lost. That you'll never have the perfect Thanksgiving meal, the perfect Christmas meal, the perfect marriage, the perfect family. Paradise has been lost. In fact, Eve had paradise, but she wanted more. It's called the insatiability of the female. You're never satisfied. And in part, God has put that within you to motivate toward the ideal. But if you're not guarded and prudent, you will become a bitter, disillusioned woman. And women are divorcing 2 to 3 times more than men are because we in the church are guilty as a culture of saying, you deserve to be loved romantically, sentimentally, perfectly, week by week. And that, my friend, is not a biblical teaching. The Bible says if you marry, you have not sinned, but you will have trouble. Sin has entered, and love is to cover a multitude of sins. You cannot have a sinless relationship. I'm not endorsing sin, I'm saying you must endure sin. It is crucial that we come to a point that we're realistic. I will not have full significance. That's why a lot of men, 2 years after they retire, they die. Because their whole life was predicated on what they did in the field. That's why so many women are disillusioned at the end of their life when their family and marriage has fallen apart and they're on medication unbelievably in this culture to soothe the pain, the feeling that they have failed. But God is saying, I want to speak a word to you that you've taken a course that you didn't need to go. But back to the idea of the man, he derives a sense of satisfaction and significance in the field. And guess what? Genesis 2:18, God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. So he creates Eve. And she comes alongside and believes in what he's doing in the field. She comes alongside and believes in that and admires that. And I'm going to tell you, in courtship, when you used to sit in that restaurant, he would talk to you about his dreams and you would just affirm that. Women are affirming individuals. You're the ones who throw the parties and celebrate. Seventh grade girls like to be on, and like to get their cheerleading outfit and be on the side. And they cheer the boys on. They just love cheering. They like cheering. Cheering. God has put that within your heart. And you cheered him during courtship. But then 3 children later, and he's not loving you, and you are no longer the cheerleader. And something has happened in his soul. And he doesn't know how to get it back. Missy says to Stu, I'm sick and tired of you choosing work over the family. You get up early and come home late. You don't care about me or the kids. Yes, I got your message about your promotion, but I don't care. This is all about you. It's always about you. You seem to have fun all day long and give me very little of yourself. And when you are home, you fall asleep watching TV. I'm fed up with this existence. We never talk. You always find time for what is important to you. You need to make me feel more important. Well, I'm thinking about going back to school, and you're going to need to support me in this. We're talking about this tonight. Right now, you need to pick up the kids from their lessons, and you need to take the check over to Molly Mae's because I forgot to pay them for cleaning because I stayed too long at the athletic club today. You talk about spinning on the crazy cycle. Bam, bam, bam. You're saying something to him, and you can be at a PMS moment and justify it, pre-murder syndrome. But you're attacking his spirit in a huge way. Huge, huge. In fact, I had this gal we know that real good friends, and she just got, oh, I have to share me talk about this. She replayed it. She said it was right before Christmas, and all the women in our neighborhood, their husbands had great professions. My husband was on staff at the university. He had a great income, but it wasn't. He was fixed in his income. And so she said all these gals were going to go over and spend money in this big city area rather than their own hometown where they could have got it for half price. So I just started telling them, can you believe it? Those husbands are writing blank checks. They're going to go over and spend the whole day spending twice what they needed. She's just going on and on and on about what these women are going to do. And his spirit just went down, 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 down. And then she was done. He got up, went into a study, shut the door, and didn't come out the rest of the evening. She just saw a spirit completely sink. And then she heard me. And so she went back to him and she said, that night that I brought that up, did you think I was saying that those men are better men than you are and those women had it better than I did? That's exactly what you were saying to me. See, we say men don't get it. Women don't get it. Men don't get pink. Women don't get blue. But when a woman feels wounded, she'll break down and cry. Men get angry and go off by themselves in silence a lot of times because they don't know what to say. Because if he says, you're saying they're... Grow up. I'm not even... just grow up. I'm not even making that point. I can't believe you... You're so arrogant. See, it just shuts him down. So he's learned early on. You don't even go there with him. Be like a man saying to a woman, look, let's just get it straight. I never have loved you. All right? Don't bring up this love stuff. You see, you women can compute that. It would just destroy you. In fact, some women say, but, well, we want to have a career. We want to work. Well, I'm going to share with you, your husband feels a call to the field. He doesn't see it as an option. Women, even though they want career, they still want it to be freedom of choice issue. In fact, young teenage girls are still looking for a man strong enough to take her out of the workforce if she wants to get out of the workforce. Still, even with the Cinderella complex, you need a man like you, a fish needs a bicycle, you know, the whole mantra of the feminist movement, and the whole mindset out there, they're going to divorce you anyway, get a career, and so on and so forth. But these girls still want to marry someone strong enough. Why? Because these girls aren't stupid. They love children. And if they want to have three children, they don't want to be told they have to work plus have a family. They want the freedom of choice. Men, on the other hand, feel they have to work. In fact, I love Tim Allen, the comedian of Home Improvement, says, today women have all kinds of choices. They can be married without children, without career. They can be unmarried with children, with career. They can be unmarried without children, without career. I mean, the choices for women are endless. It goes on and on and on. The choices are endless. Men, they only have two choices, work or go to jail. Now, here's what you can do. Just send him a note. Just write him a little note. You know, I was thinking of you that you have to work. I just want to say thank you. That's all you have to do. That isn't romantic to you, I understand. That doesn't make sense to you. But I'm going to tell you, that can be very deep. That's all you have to do. Thank you for working. I don't think I understand the dog-eat-dog world that you're in. I don't think I understand the pressure that you feel and the comparisons that are made to you. Thank you for providing. You watch what happens. Don't put a pink heart. Don't put X's and O's. Save that for another one. These are the kinds of things that ignite fond feelings. See, guys come to a point, in some ways, they just feel like their meal ticket. You know, they hear you say, I have four children, three by birth, one by marriage. And there's this demeaning, condescending. He's just bringing home the paycheck, bringing home the paycheck. And one guy says, that's all I am now, is a meal ticket. You know, I'm just a meal ticket. In fact, one guy said, you know, I got my wife six credit cards. I'm just a meal ticket. In fact, the other day, somebody stole one of her credit cards out of her purse. But I didn't turn it in because whoever stole it was spending less on it than she did. So is he reacting in ways that feel unloving to you? Could you have prior to sent a message, I don't respect your desire. I don't respect something about your spirit. He didn't intend to. We're not talking about intentions. He's not intending to be unloving either. You're not intending to be disrespectful. But when you step on somebody's air hose, when they're vulnerable, these unintended messages, And if you see a spirit deflate, just say, that felt very loving. Your reaction as you walked off, did I say something just prior to this that was disrespectful to you? Watch what happens. Watch what happens. Watch what happens. Very, very powerful. So, C is conquest. H is hierarchy. Isn't this romantic? Hierarchy. Hierarchy. His desire to provide and protect and even die. Deborah Tannen, the great linguist, says this in her book, You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation. Having done the research that led to this book, I now see that my husband was simply engaging the world in a way that many men do. As an individual in a hierarchical, there it is, hierarchical social order in which he was either one up or one down. Men see themselves in terms of rankings. Look at the business arena, CEO, vice presidents, managers. Look at the military, the four-star general, three-star, two colonel, on down majors, sergeants, so on and so forth. You see it in the government, president, vice president. That reflects the male psyche. We function very well as long as there's mutual honor and justice. But when there's dishonor and unfairness, you've got revolt. But men come to a point where they say, he's a 10-talent man, I'm a 7-talent man. I don't want all his responsibilities, but if this 10-talent man says to the 7-talent man, I can't do this job without you, then I need you. Don't ever leave me, because they'll all know I'm a failure. I need you. And then what can I do? Are you compensated well here? I have two commitments, to honor you and treat you justly, because if I lose you, everybody's going to know that you are behind this thing. We talk about loyalty, service, and dying. We come to a point where we function extremely well in that. We don't always like to be second sometimes, but we come to a point where we say, that's okay. In fact, I love this role, and that's all right. And we function with high energy. But see, we are hierarchical. So when you confront your husband to connect, sit down and talk to me, sit down. He hears you confront to control. He thinks it's one up. He says, quit picking a fight. You're just provoking me. Leave me alone. Why are you doing this? And you're just trying to connect. You're trying to couple. And he thinks you're trying to chair things to wear the pants. And that's why you say, you're just going to do what you want to do anyway, and you just always want to wear the pants in this family. You know, wear the pants? What are you talking about? What planet are you from? I can't believe you talked to me this. You talk about confusion. Both are coming at it from pink and blue. But I'm going to tell you, your husband feels a responsibility to provide for you, to protect, and to be that umbrella of protection over you. It's a huge feeling that he has. Women and children first. Yes. We die. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's how men view other men. We see this as a responsibility, not as a right. But you know, the feminist movement, though they're good-willed women in that thing, and they're intellectual women, they have seen this attitude in men that's really, truthfully, a sense of responsibility. They've read that as a sense of right. You men want to dominate. No, men want to be responsible. You see it as a right. No, we see it as a responsibility. Men have I've never had any meeting where men says, isn't it great that we have these rights? That has never gone down as a conversation. Men don't even process it that way. I'm telling you, there are two different cultures. The culture of women and all the talk that's going on, and the culture of men. And they are not the same. Men just don't think in those terms. They just feel like we must be responsible. And if we aren't, we're viewed as irresponsible. That's just the way it is in our world. That's why the headship idea has become so provocative to some women. Ephesians 5, 23 and 24. For the husband is the head of the wife. What does that mean? As Christ also is the head of the church. Whatever else it means, it must include and be restricted by whatever Christ is in relationship to the church. But then notice what it says. He, Jesus, himself being the savior of the body. What's he talking about? He dies. What does it mean to be the head? We die. This is a responsibility, not a right. Headship is a responsibility. Why can't we understand what the scriptures mean? And we have people telling us that it means a right. It does not mean a right. And men don't process it as a right. Women process it as a right because you see an attitude of independence. And especially when he feels disrespected, he gets stubborn. And you see him trying to dominate and shut you off and try to control you. But that isn't where it's coming from. He's trying to send a message, I don't feel respected by you right now. He's not thinking, I'm going to control this woman. Your son is going to do this toward your daughter-in-law. Mark my words, I know what I speak is truth. He's a good-willed boy who's going to react this way and be completely misinterpreted and misunderstood. If we don't change the course. E.V. Hill, the great African-American pastor, Jim Dobson was interviewing him, and He recalls when he was first a pastor, they just had started, he and Jane were in the ministry, and they were really struggling. And he came home one night, and as he came into the house was dark, and he comes into the dining area, and there's candlelights in the dinner. And Jane is standing there smiling at him. He says, "What's going on? I thought we'd eat by candlelight." "Hey, great, I'll wash my hands." So he goes into the bathroom, flips on the lights, and they don't come on. So he goes back to Jane and says to her, "The lights didn't come on." And she starts crying. "You work so hard and we're trying, but it's pretty rough. I didn't have enough money to pay the light bill. I didn't want you to know about it, so I thought we would just eat by candlelight." And Dr. Hill described his wife's words with intense emotion. She could have said, "I've never been in this situation before. I was reared in the home of Dr. Kalabas, and we never had our lights cut off." She could have broken my spirit. She could have ruined me. She could have demoralized me. But instead, she said, "Somehow or other, we'll get these lights back on. But tonight, let's eat by candlelight." You see what I'm talking about here? Men are extremely vulnerable and sensitive to certain things that you women are clueless about at times. I did a company, they had their 6 vice presidents and the president. They asked Sarah and me to come to a private conference for them. During the intermission of one of the times, one of the vice president's wife came up and said, "We got a story for you. We just built this wonderful new home. One of my wife's girlfriends, kind of a distant friend, but a friend, wanted to take the cook's tour of our new home. So we said, sure." She said, "Can I bring my husband over?" I said, "Sure." So we were halfway through the tour, coming down the steps, when suddenly this wife stops at the steps, turns around, puts her finger in her husband's chest and says, "You need to get a second job." And stomped right on down and went into another room. The husband was absolutely devastated. They saw him turn white. His spirit just sank. And on the way home, I'm going to tell you, when he's driving, he's going to go, "I can't believe how you hurt me in front of those people. I just can't believe you." He's not going to do that. He's going to white knuckle that steering wheel. He's not going to have sex with a drill instructor for 6 weeks. He's going to get angry. And of course, she's going to start videotaping right there. And take the videotape to the pastor, to the counselor, to her mother, to her sister, and all her girlfriends. She treats me. And I'm getting emails all over America. They start telling me this story right there. They start filming in pink. This is what he does to me. And I said, "Man, he is irrational. He just does that?" "Well, no. I mean, I said, tell me, did anything happen prior?" And women will always tell me, because they're not mean, and they're really not trying to hide anything. They just don't take it seriously. They think he should understand, he should be big enough and tough enough. For heaven's sakes, he's 6'3" and 214 pounds. He should be able to take it. He should not be ventilating. Your baby boy is going to just die. And they'll always tell me, "Well, when I was in the steps, I said he needed to get a second job. Put my finger in it. I go, now that I think about it, that was really horrible." And then they suddenly see it. This is what's so tender and wonderful about women. They suddenly see it. Now, some of you women are suddenly going, Oh no. You're only 2 points in, and I'm already feeling like I'm a miserable creep, and we got 4 more after this. Oh no. Oh, it's me. Oh no. I've been blaming him, and it's me. Hey, listen to me. All you have to say to him, very simple, go to him and say, "I realize I've been so disrespectful. It's me. It's me. I thought you were so unloving. And there are things, but it's me. It's really, I'm disrespectful. I've ruined the relationship." Do you mean that?
Yeah, I do.
You're just probably saying it.
No, it's really me. It's me. I'm horrible. I'm rotten. I'm rotten.
You really believe that?
It's me. Yeah, I've ruined the relationship.
Hey, drop it. Forget it. The game is on. Here's your Pepsi. Let's go watch it.
About the way that males and females resolve conflicts. And he talked about 2 little girls who, you know, they're playing a game of hopscotch. And he said they're playing it. They're not playing it because they care about the game. They're connecting with each other and they're talking and it's just trying to be together. But if they get into a conflict or a fight, they say some harsh things and then they split for a while and then they circle back and then somebody apologizes and then they reconcile. He just described this whole process about the way that girls will handle a thing like that. And then he says with the boys, the illustration he gave was him and his buddy. He borrowed his buddy's mitt, And came back the next day and said, I'm sorry, my dog chewed your mitt. It's ruined. And his brother's all mad. Or I mean, his friend's all mad. You idiot. Why did you give it to your dog? Why did you get, you know, why don't you watch your dog? And so they kind of blow up at each other a little bit. And then the guy kind of goes off into the kitchen. And he says, no, I don't follow him into the kitchen and say, hey, talk to me. You know, it's kind of funny the way he says, that would be sick. Guys don't do that. So he just lets him go, you know, and he cools off. The guy comes back in. He's like, man, I'm sorry. That dog's not going to see the daylight. I'm going to shoot it tonight. You know? Buy you a new mitt. The guy's like, oh, forget it. Here's your Pepsi. Let's watch the game. And that's the end of it. And that's for guys, that's how it's resolved. For girls, that's not how things are resolved. So that's what he was referring to with the, there's your Pepsi. Let's watch the game.
So you're not married to a man who's as loving as you, but you're married to a man who's honorable. You're not married to a woman who's respectful as you, but you're married to a loving person. And we have to come to a point that God intended that to be a compliment. God's not pink, God's not blue, God's purple. When you put pink and blue together, it's purple, the color of royalty. God created us in His image. Male and female, He created. That really tickled you that it's purple, didn't it? Didn't it? But God created us that way. To complement, to ultimately reflect His image. Not wrong, just different. And coming to a point where some of you ladies realize you're married to a man of honor. He doesn't have to say, we need to talk about this tonight and tomorrow. What did you mean when you said this back in 1983 when you didn't respect me? And you had that stupid green sweater on that I didn't like. He doesn't even go there. He can't even remember that decade. Just drop it. Forget it. Let's move on. Which you hate at certain times when you're wanting to bring it full circle. When you have a need, you want Him to come full circle. But I'm going to tell you, there are other times when you need to thank God that that's the way He is. Because when you seek His forgiveness for being disrespectful, He didn't have a need to talk about it for 3 hours. He didn't want to talk. Which is something you criticize Him for. But you have a strength there. And every strength has a backside of weakness. You got to see that everything that irritates you also is an incredible gift. Every rose has thorns. You've got to come to the bigger picture. And when you do, you can roll with this a little bit more. Yeah, it hurts us. It offends us. But see that there's some deep nugget of wisdom that God has given to you in this moment of irritation. There's got to be a rose here somewhere. Because I just got pricked by a thorn. Decode, is he reacting in unloving ways? Maybe he just feels disrespected. And I'm going to tell you, men are confused today, too, because there are confusing messages. There's an incongruity. When I was getting my PhD, I said to these women who are feminists, most of them said, hey, if we go to that bagel shop tonight and get a bagel and a burger jumps out to kill us, am I to die for you or are you to die for me? And they all looked at me and grinned and said, you're to die for us. And I said, what happened to equality? See the incongruity? Certain political, we're equal. And then at these other times, there's another message. You're to be responsible for me. You're to die for me. Missy complains to Stu, I can't believe you buy into that notion that the man is the breadwinner and the defender of the caste. We're equal and don't you forget it. And while I'm expressing things that upset me about you, I can't believe you walked ahead of me to the car. I almost fell on the ice. What if I had broken my leg? Would your insurance cover me? Plus, why did you let our teen son make fun of me and say that I look like a calf on ice? Stu, you're pretty low on the what it means to be a human being scale. Stu is crushed. He feels put down for who he is. He closes off his spirit, walks away, and refuses to talk with her for 2 days. At which time she begins to videotape. See, he doesn't talk to me. And the church, don't worry about it. The Bible says, let every fact be confirmed by 2 or 3 witnesses. Let every report that's given, somebody else come and cross-examine, always bring in the other side. We don't worry about that. We listen to the first person who comes in. We don't listen for the other report. If that person breaks down and cries, we give them a Kleenex or whatever. We just believe that report. And I'm going to tell you, that report is sincere. It's not insincere, but it's videotaped in pink. And it doesn't include what was just a violation of the spirit of the male that God designed. And we who are in spiritual leadership had better stop listening to the first and only report. You must always listen to both reports, and you must always get all the facts. And if you don't you draw any conclusions. That's contrary to the heart of Christ. We are contributing to the problem. We're not healing. We are contributing to the problem, and I am guilty of that. I'm not criticizing you, I'm criticizing myself. I suddenly realized one day that I thought I was helping when I was feeding the problem. Why? Because when I offend the male, he doesn't come back. Say, you know what? Look at how unloved she feels. Look at how lonely she is. She's crying here. You know what? You're not adequate, and I don't respect you. Remember the research question? And then I wonder why the guy didn't come back. That'd be the same as us saying to the women, you know what? We're going to change this. Look at how inadequate he feels and disrespected. We're going to leave you alone, and we're not going to love you until you start making him feel adequate and respecting him. Every woman would be devastated. You don't function that way. But we're saying to men, we don't believe you're adequate. We don't respect you. That's why they're not coming in for counsel. And if they do come in for counsel, that's the message we send. So then they walk off and don't come back, and we videotape and say, these men have a serious problem. And I used to say that men were contributing to the marital problems 9 out of 10 cases. Where does the Bible teach that? Your son needs to be understood. And you need to help your daughter-in-law understand him. And also, your daughter needs to understand your son. And when this mutual thing happens, oh, you talk about healing. Even now, some of you are beginning to experience it. And this is what God intended. And it's so wonderful. But people say the key to marriage is communication. No, the key to marriage is mutual understanding. But if the mother tongue of men has been removed from the marital equation, we're only speaking one language, and he doesn't speak yours, and you don't speak his, you will not have good communication. You will not have communion. Now, here's what I'd recommend, though, in terms of this hierarchy thing. Here's what I want you to do. He would die for you. So here's what you could do. Write a respect card. Beyond your words of love, say it his way, the card he'll keep. Write it this way. Say something like this. Your term of endearment, dear Poochie Poo. I was thinking of you the other day that you would literally die for me. That is an overwhelming thought to me. Thank you. And send it this way. With all my respect, the one who still admires you. Now, ladies, let me share something with you. Men in this auditorium just teared up. I've been doing this long enough. You need to understand, this is the kind of thing that men literally give their lives for. They literally die. That's why they go see Saving Private Ryan or The Gladiator. They get highly energized by issues of honor. They get inspired. You get inspired by Sleepless in Seattle. Not wrong, just different. But if we don't understand that, we're going to pass judgment on males, and this is where we're at in the culture. There's something seriously wrong with these men. And we say they don't have feelings. They do too. These men teared up just then. But you've got to speak their mother tongue. And don't sign it with hearts and X's and O's and exclamation points. I've had women, they can't say the word respect. They said to put the word love. Don't do it, just now. With all my respect, the one who admires you. It's like it doesn't come out. They freeze. I even had one woman say, what's that word again? Respect. Oh, yes, I need to write that down. I thought she was joking with me. And then I realized she wasn't joking. C is conquest. H is hierarchy. A is authority. Now, if there are any angels in this auditorium, they've just fled. Angels fear to go where I'm about to go with this word authority. But let me just share with you why I use the word authority. It's a biblical idea. But also, we just established the fact that your husband feels primarily responsible for you. So here's what I'm going to ask you. Do you believe he's at least 51% responsible for you? If you don't, if you just take an egalitarian position, we're 50-50 responsible, then don't expect him to necessarily always open the door for you and be a knife. That's why the feminist movement is trying to be consistent, and why it can be sexual harassment in a business if a man opens the door for a woman. I mean, they realize the logic of their system has to go all the way. That's why they're pursuing women in combat. They know that the philosophy of their system has to go toward absolute equality. But there's a real discomfort with that, because there's a recognition that there are some differences. So we're at an interesting point, but you're going to have to decide. Are you an absolute egalitarian? If you are, then you don't have to listen to me. You can sleep. But if you're here and you believe that your husband is responsible to die for you tonight if a burglar comes in, and I'm going to tell you, the responsibility to die for somebody is no small issue. Would you listen to me? This is not a small issue. This is humongous. And men feel it. They feel it deep within their hearts. And he knows he would die for you, only to hear every day that you don't love me, you don't love me. When Jesus said, no greater love is a man than this, he laid down his life for his friend. But then you say, you don't love me, don't. It's kind of like, what? Man. He's confused, but he feels that. Now, if you believe this, then here's what I want to share with you. Leadership 101 says this. Let's say Monday you go to work and you have 1,000 employees, and the board meets and says, hey, we want you to be the CEO of this thing. We're going to pay you $2 million salary, $10 million bonus. You're responsible for everything in this organization. Do you want it? Oh, yes! Oh, by the way, you have authority to do nothing. What are we setting that person up for? Failure. We know this. We know this because it's a violation of Leadership 101. If you hold somebody primarily responsible, you must give them equal authority to that responsibility. If you say to somebody, you're responsible, but I have the authority. If you go around saying, you can't do that, we're equal. You can't do that, we're equal. You can't do that, we're equal. And at the same time, in the truth of it, you're holding him 51% responsible. You're then saying, you're responsible, but I have veto power. I have the authority as the woman. We're equal. You can't do that. You're not saying you're equal. You're living a whole life saying you're 51% responsible, but if you make a decision contrary to what I want, I'm going to tell you, you can't do that. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to be feeling like a failure. And I will tell you that the person who's getting that $2 million salary and a $10 million bonus, he'll finally say, you know, I'm not quitting because I'm going to collect this paycheck, but I'm moving into passive irresponsibility. Does anybody see passive irresponsibility among men and families and marriages? It's an epidemic. Why? Because we violated Leadership 101. Now, men do not put a voice and vocabulary to this. Men cannot articulate what I'm saying, but as they're sitting here listening to me, they're saying, yes, yes, this is what I feel. This is, yes, you, oh man, oh man. He's having such self-discovery at this point. I mean, light bulbs are going on in this guy. But you have to decide. The reason I bring this up is that 1 Timothy 2:12 says, I do not allow a woman to exercise authority over a man. And women today say that's a sexist comment made by some chauvinistic apostles in the first century that doesn't apply today. Or could that be from the heart of Abba, which they said came from the heart of God himself, who loves you? And also, we know from the best research, women don't want to exercise authority over men. They want mutual deference. And I don't care if we go to New York to Florida for our vacation. I just want us to be happy as a family. Women, I don't care what decision we make. I just want us to be happy. Women are much more involved with relationships and process. They don't want to wear the pants. That doesn't turn them on at the end of the day. That's not what they want. So that's not what you want anyway. You don't want to exercise authority. What you don't want to be is him to exercise authority over you that doesn't take your needs and the family's into account. And what's interesting today, women aren't upset about the dominance of the male. They're really upset about the fact that men are not the spiritual leaders. What's really upsetting women across America is he's not the spiritual leader. He's not taking the spiritual initiative. Why? Because you send him a message that he's responsible, but you're in control. And every time he went to the plate and he didn't do it, you critiqued him. Why? Because you tried to be helpful and it was rooted in fear. I understand that. He doesn't. And so he just quits because he feels you're setting him up for failure, that you're almost putting him out there so that you can criticize him. But that's not what my heart is. I know that. When he gets angry, he's not trying to be unloving either. But it doesn't make any difference if he gets angry and arson. He's not trying to be unloving. If you feel unloved, he's got to make an adjustment. It doesn't make any difference if you're rooted in fear and just trying to be helpful, but you're coming across and saying, you're responsible, but I'm in charge, Buster. And if that's how he's hearing you, I'm going to tell you, he's going to shut down on you. He'll just shut down on you. Should he? No. We can have the moral all day long. He ought not. He ought not. He ought not. I'm just telling you, that's the way God's designed it. Well, what can I do? Just go on record. Here it is. As simple as this. Just say, wow, what Emerson said was mind-boggling. I want to go on record. I'm not trying to exercise authority over you. That doesn't turn me on. And when I argue the case, it's because it's rooted in fear and I'm trying to be helpful. Can you trust my heart? Even though I get carried away at times as I take issue with what you're doing, I'm not trying to wear the pants. I do see you as 51% responsible. I want you to have 51% of the authority. I'm just arguing the case, but not trying to control you. Can you trust my heart? Watch the nature of your arguments change overnight. I'm going to tell you, he's not been resisting you because of what you're saying, but because he thinks you're trying to control him. And once you go on record, you've spoken the honor code, he will trust your heart and watch. Everything will change. It'll just change. It's a powerful thing. But you need to see that he sees himself as a man. 1 Corinthians 16:13, act like men, be strong. 1 Kings 2:2, be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. And Dr. Deborah Tannen said men are taller, more heftily built, lower pitched voice. She calls these markers of authority, whereas women are smaller, slighter, and high pitched voice. And what happens sometimes because of that, you up the ante. You get overly negative, overly emotional to try to make the case. And you think he should know why you're doing that. And it just is overkill because all the message is saying we're equal, we're equal, equal. And then it's kind of like you're trying to be more equal and he gets confused and he just gives up and goes, turns on the TV and just stonewalls you. But if you come to him and say, will you forgive me? I dishonored you. I'm not trying to exercise authority. It's such a precious thought that you would die for me. And it's right. Leadership 101 is right. Trust my heart. Please forgive me. He's going to say, hey, the alligator man is on. Let's watch it together. And I just recommend that you do what Sarah and I've done. We decided when we got married that I would make all the major decisions, she'd make all the minor decisions. And that's worked great since 1973. We've not had a major decision yet. I say to Sarah, is that one? No, that's minor. Is that a major? No, that's minor. What about this one? No, that's minor. C is conquest, H is hierarchy, A is authority, I is insight. Appreciating his desire to analyze and counsel. Men are solution-oriented. That we score higher in general on the aptitudes, women on the verbal side. Not wrong, just different. These are skills and strengths that God has provided. But he tends to be more solution-oriented. Not all men are. The constants are love and respect. Some women stonewall. Some men do not. That's a cultural application. But the constants are love and respect. If you stonewall as a woman, my conclusion is if you love him, he's going to feel disrespected. He's not going to feel you don't love him. And if you come at her too much talking all the time, it's not that she's going to feel disrespected. Ultimately, she's going to say, if you love me, you give me more space. So the constants are love and respect. The variables are these applications. So understand, there's not a reversal. The cultural applications do not prove that you somehow are in violation of Scripture. Go deeper. You'll see the constants. But here's a cultural application. Men tend to be solution-oriented, and women are more verbal on that side of it. And when men have problems, and they come to one another, I come to Joe and I say, hey, Joe, I've been thinking about this, this, and this. I've got this problem. Joe immediately kicks in the solution. He said, well, did you think about this or what about this? Or did you try this and this and this? No. Man, I should have come to you 2 weeks ago. Thanks. I don't say to him, Joe, you quit trying to fix me. That never would even enter a man's mind. We see it as helpful. You're giving me a solution because I came to you with a problem. When we come to another man with a problem, we kick in the solution. So your wife comes to you with a problem, we kick in the solution mode. Only be told, quit trying to fix me. And I said last night, we've got to be less solution-oriented, more empathy-oriented. Nonetheless, there comes a moment when you come to your husband, you want him to validate your feelings. Just validate my feelings. Just listen to me. And he's thinking, but those feelings aren't valid. Does he have the right to tell you that? And in this culture, at this time, no, he does not. That's what the culture's saying. Women are right, men are wrong. Women are righteous, men are unrighteous. I'm telling you, this is deeply disturbing. Where do women sin today? They sin in reaction to their husband, who isn't loving. They sin when they're exhausted with their children. But every other issue, it's not gluttony, it's an eating disorder. It's a chemical imbalance. It's not an outburst of anger. If you look at all the things. We've psychologically interpreted all of your issues. Where do you sin? Now, you're very confessional in bad attitudes and so on and so forth, but usually that's triggered by somebody else, isn't it? And if they would just change a little bit, you would outlove them. I say this not because I'm trying to shame you, but I want to share something with you. Your husband sees you as righteous. He knows you don't struggle with what he does. He's in tune with his dark side, I'm telling you, big time. You know, sexual temptations, you are naive about what he's aware of. He just sees the dark side. He knows it. Eve was deceived. Adam disobeyed. And that's a big difference. And the Bible says in 1 Timothy 2:14, Eve was deceived, not Adam. Adam was very conscious of his dark side. He knew what he was doing. But Eve got duped. She didn't see her sin. And what I'm going to tell you is your husband sees himself as unrighteous. He sees you as righteous. But here's something interesting. There comes a moment when you see him. You catch him on the internet with pornography. You would never go that way because you don't have that temptation. So you judge him, and you're threatened at the core of your being. I understand what's really going on there, but boy, do you come at him. And so you catch him in unrighteousness. And then there comes this moment when you see yourself as more righteous than him. And let me share with you, the number one sin that Jesus confronted was the self-righteous religious person. Because they don't see themselves as sinners. Jesus said in Luke 18:9, he told this parable to certain ones who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Do you view your husband with contempt? It could be that you see yourself as self-righteous. Now, why do I bring this up? To shame you? No. I'm going to tell you, though, you cannot be intimate with a self-righteous person. You want to know why your husband's closed off? He's afraid of you. Does he tell you that he's afraid of you? No. Mm-mm. That just feels too effeminate to him. And he's not afraid of you in a broader scope, but he is fearful. But he's not going to tell you that. It's just too hard for him. He cannot open up
And if he did open up and tell you his sin, what would you do in response to that? You see, women want men to be open today, but only if it increases the feelings of love between them. But if he were to confess his deep, dark side, and it threatened you at the core of your being, and it was an area that you didn't struggle with, you'd judge him. You want to know why your husband is shutting down? You want to know why he's coming across in unloving ways? He's not trying to be unloving. If you send a series of messages, I despise who you are, I have contempt for who you are, I disrespect who you are, particularly because you're doing things that I would never do, and you're threatening at the core of my being, which means you're very unloving as well, what do you expect your baby boy to do in relationship to a daughter-in-law who sends that message to him? He simply will freeze. He is not going to know what to do other than get angry. And then they'll videotape him. And he'll be divorced. 50% divorce rate in the church right now. It's going to continue unless we stop this. And your grandchildren are going to be crying themselves to sleep at night and wetting the bed. You're going to go through so much pain. And the pain is continuing to increase unless something, God does something in His grace and mercy and brings a change. And I'm believing and trusting that He's going to do that as we come back to His truth that He's revealed from His heart. Diane confessed she mentally put down her husband. She mocked his ideas and his reactions or responses and secretly made fun of his opinions. One day when she visited him at his office, she was struck by the tremendous respect his co-workers, his secretary, and his boss showed him. She shared how she got a knot in her stomach when she heard a man who was older and more experienced than her husband say yes to him. And she was both frightened and ashamed when she saw how his young secretary looked up and admired him. When I got to the car, she said, I started crying. The thing that disturbed me most is that I was judging him not because of his actions or because he isn't a good husband, but because he wasn't what I wanted him to be. From the book, Beloved Unbeliever. Now again, if you're feeling, oh wow, just turn to yours and say, will you forgive me for having dishonored you? I now see how God made you, and I wounded you. It was rooted in fear. I panicked. Emerson's right. I never intended for this. I was hoping for your strength that you would be the mature one to be able to understand my deeper cry, but I realized you too have your vulnerabilities, but you just freeze up. I hope at some point you can forgive me. Now, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you, if she goes there, that you do the honorable thing. And you're going to bring such incredible healing to your relationship. A joy is going to come back to your relationship that you thought was lost. And in nanoseconds, it'll come back. God didn't intend this to be complex. We're the ones that make it complex. But ladies, I just say, guard against an attitude that says he has no insight. I preached for years you had intuition that he needed to listen to, and I believe that, but we've fallen off the horse on the other side. He too has insights. Will you permit him to share those insights at times? He has issues he wants to contribute. He's there to serve you and help you. He won't be as necessarily as sensitive. He won't be necessarily as loving, but is he speaking truth to you? Is he speaking truth? You'll have to decide that. But if your husband wants to speak truth, then value his input. Value what he's saying. And watch what happens. You want him to be the spiritual leader, but then if he contributes something outside of that environment, you say to him, I don't want to receive it. So he just thinks, I'm not going there, man. This is too disrespectful to me. It just deflates me too much. But guard against the self-righteous attitude. Hans and Gretel. Gretel says, Hans, we're fighting and bickering way too much. And I've been thinking. I think we need to pray to the dear Lord to take one of us to heaven. The one causing all the problems. So Hans, you pray that he take one of us, and I'll pray that he take one of us, so I can then move in with my sister. Guard the attitude there, Gretel. Guard the attitude. So C is conquest, H is hierarchy, A is authority, I is insight, R is relationship. Relationship shoulder to shoulder. The shoulder to shoulder friendship. He married you because you loved and liked him. Song of Solomon 5:1. God calls this couple friends, O lovers. I love it. Friends, O lovers. I call it lover friendship. God describes that couple as friends and lovers. Your husband married you because he thought you'd be his companion, his friend. And then she says about her husband, he's wholly desirable, in verse 16. This is my beloved and this is my friend. There was a time when you said we're best of friends and he saw you as his companion. But after marriage, it's been kind of documented that as those three children come, you move into exhaustion and the PMS issues. There are a lot of chemical things that do happen. I don't discount that at all. But a negativity comes over you. You know, women want the relationship to be more positive. Men want it to be less negative. true. That's just the way it goes down. That's the way it goes down. And so in the home, you become unfriendly. Unfriendly. That's why Titus 2 says the older women are to encourage the younger women to love their husbands and love their children. But that Greek word is not agape, as we pointed out. That is phileo. That she is to be friendly toward her husband and friendly toward her children. You ask the children, does your mommy love you? Yes. Does she like you? No, not today. We've been bad. Now notice it says you're to phileo your husband. That's the Greek. It didn't say fillet him. But I'll tell you, in courtship, you wanted to be with him. He'd be playing an intramural basketball, and you came and watched him, and you cheered him on. And he thought that was always going to be the way this relationship was. You'd be there shoulder to shoulder with him. And then the children came. But his desires didn't change. He hasn't changed. But he has gone quiet. Just as you want a face-to-face relationship, and I encouraged him to do that as a man of honor, as a woman of love, I'm going to encourage you to do some shoulder-to-shoulder things with him without talking. Just being with him without talking. You know, women say the key to marriage is communication. Where does the Bible teach that? It does not. If anything, for women, it says inner quietness. Quietness is the key. You don't have to always talk to him to connect. In fact, he's energized by your mere presence, not by you talking. And when you're with him without talking, he then eventually, probably, will open up. But see, this makes no sense to women. But I'm going to tell you, there were things I said last night that made no sense to men about how to love you. Just, why do we keep talking about the same thing over and over again? Dr. Deborah Tannen did an interesting research. She had two 20-year-old women who were best of friends, two 16-year-old girls best of friends, two 12-year-olds, and two 6-year-old girls. And these were dyads, they called them. They were best of friends. And they would bring these two into a room. So she just brought the two 20-year-olds into a room, and there were two chairs, and that was it. And she said, be here, we'll come back. Well, these were best of friends. What did all the women and girls do in relationship to those two chairs? They either turned the chairs toward one another and crossed their legs and talked face-to-face, or they turned in the chairs, put their elbow on the rest, and talked face-to-face. All four dyads did that. That's what women do. It's the way God has made you. Not wrong, just different. Then she had two 20-year-old men, two 16-year-old boys, two 12-year-old boys, two 6-year-old boys. What did the men and boys do in relationship to those chairs except the 6-year-old boys who didn't sit in it? But we'll medicate them. Don't worry. Just no comment. The men did not move the chairs, just sat looking straight ahead, and periodically would look at one another and talk. Now, these were best of friends. They're all like to talk. And then, who had the most intimate of conversations, the men or the women? The 16-year-old boys did. And Dr. Deborah Tannen and her crew were stunned because the boys hardly even said anything as they sat there. And then, periodically, one would turn, and if you turned off the audio, you wouldn't know they were having a conversation. You turn on the audio, and what the one said to the other was so transparent, so revealing, it was unbelievable. But he didn't say a lot. And he didn't look a lot. But what he said was very transparent. You know, women have this idea that relationships have to be based on how they want relationships. That's why when guys go hunting, they go 3 days north, hunt, come back, and then the wife says, well, how was your time with Bob? Good. What'd you talk about? Nothing. You didn't ask Bob about Mary's pregnancy? Mary pregnant? Now, this isn't always about all your needs, ladies. I'm going to tell you, though, it's ultimately going to meet your needs because the way you energize your husband, eventually, as you just are with him shoulder to shoulder, he turns and says something so transparent you fall off the chair. But you've got to give him time. You just give him time. You just be with him because the energy goes into him shoulder to shoulder, not face to face always. Think of it that way. Energy goes into him when you are with him, just quietly with him. He has a need for that. There's just something in him that needs that. Is that okay? In fact, there was this couple who came. They had a huge fight because prior to the conference, he was painting outside and she was looking at him through the kitchen window. He says, come out here and be with me. So she came out with him and she started talking. He said, I don't want to talk. He said, you got to want to talk. I don't got to want to talk. You got to want to talk because you called me out here to be with you. I don't got to want to talk because I called you out here to be with me. And a huge fight and she stomped off. Then she listened to what I just said. So then he was still painting after the conference. And then she brought out a lounge chair, sat down in a lounge chair, no suntan lotion, no book, and she just laid there and watched him as he was painting. She said it was stunning. She said nothing. No. For 45 minutes, she sat there. And then she got up and she said, that energized you, did it? He said, oh, you have no idea. And she told me she had no idea. She just could not. You're going to hear Sarah in a few minutes tell you some stories that are going to blow you away. This works, ladies, but you got to take it by faith. I remember growing up in Peoria and riding my bike up and down as blue-collar city, and guys were always working on their cars. And I can remember, right, and I had this flashback one day, that there was one woman who used to sit on a stool. She'd be doing her fingernails, smoking a cigarette, her lucky cigarette, I remember, and lipstick. And the guy was under the car working on the car. And she'd just be sitting there, no other women around. She wouldn't talk, and just sat there. She'd sit there for a couple hours, doing her nails and everything. And I remember, they didn't divorce. See, an energy was going into him. She wasn't formally educated, but she had wisdom. She knew he had a need. He wanted her to be there just with him. And then remember, there was no jack in the car. He was holding up with his chest. You there, honey? Decode, is he reacting in unloving ways? It could be that he's feeling disrespected. You just don't like him. He's not your friend. You don't want to be with him because it's a waste of time. You have more important things to do. That's how he feels sometimes when you want to talk about the same thing over and over again. Let's stop passing judgment on one another. Your spouse has a vulnerability and need that you don't have. Is that okay? Receive it. Don't criticize it. And then lastly, sexuality. Proverbs 5:19, as a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. Did you know there's no Bible verse that says, let his breast satisfy you at all times? You say, that is sick. Well, that's true, but also I see the obvious, and seemingly others don't. What this verse is saying is that men are visually oriented. Jesus said, I say to you that everyone who looks on a woman to lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Jesus acknowledges here that men are visually oriented, and you've got to be guarded. Why Job made a covenant with his eyes not to look upon a virgin in that lustful way. But I'm going to share with you that your husband has a need for sexual release in the same way that you have a need for emotional release. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Your husband has a need. You have a need. His anatomy, generally speaking, is not true for all men because we see that there are impotency issues in the culture. But your husband has a need, generally speaking, just as you have emotionally. There's some women who shut down and don't want to talk. But these are the exceptions. My point is that, is it okay for him to have a need that you don't have? You know, early on, I'm going to believe this, that your husband saw you as his best friend. And he was at work, and somebody came to the drinking fountain, didn't have a bra on, and he got an eyeful, and his biology kicked into gear. And so he comes home to tell his best friend, his companion, man, can't believe it, that new gal that came on, she came to the drinking fountain, and he starts telling this with you, and you go ballistic. Why? Because you project onto him pink. Everything is interpreted through pink now. That you would never have sexual feelings toward anybody unless there's a lot of time together, a lot of talk, a lot of touch, a lot of tenderness. So you project that all onto him, fear comes over you, and you blast him with contempt. Because you are the determiner of truth. What you feel is the voice of God. The fact of the matter is, that's the first time he ever saw him, her. He doesn't know her name. Men respond to the visual. We don't like it. We didn't ask to be made this way. You have your chemical monthly issues that you have to understand. There's a metabolism in you that we can't relate with. Calm down, woman. So we can fire at one another all day long, and we can do so as long as we're only looking at it through pink and blue. I love judging you based on blue. And you love judging me based on pink. But we better start looking at it through purple. And you know what? He came to you and opened up with you because he wanted to confess. But you know what? The only reason you wanted to be open is to increase the feelings of love. And if he tells you a dark side of his soul, where you say, my husband's not open with me, he's not open with me, he's not open with me. You told him not to be. In fact, you say, have eyes only for me. So he does, and then you push him away. And it isn't about sex, it's about honor. You need to understand something here. It's deeper than that. Why? Men can't put a voice to this. You women are much better at communicating the deeper need of love in terms of your issues. He doesn't know how to say, I feel dishonored. And if he did feel dishonored, you'd say, that's insulting to me. Can't believe that you would escalate this issue of sex to an issue of honor to you. You arrogant pig. I'll tell you, he will shut down on you for years. He'll be frightened of your tongue. He will live in the fear of your tongue. Why does he leave your presence when things get hot? He is afraid of you butchering his soul. Is that your intent? No. And gentlemen, I'm going to tell you, that is not her intent. So, and women are good at making confession, and she will receive it. Do not. Now, here's something very important. Some of you are at a point in your relationship where you feel it's already over with. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to take this information, and you're going to not only punish your spouse, but you're going to seek to kill their spirit. I remember praying, and I said, I've said to the Lord, I'd love for you, Lord, just to judge that person quickly who does that. But I can't pray that way, Lord. So I'm just going to appeal to your deeper nobility. Please don't go there. Just go quiet. You can take this information. You can actually take truth and kill the spirit of your spouse. Please don't go there with this. If your wife then gets tender toward you and you're at a point where you're saying, yo, good, I'm going to pay her back. Because I've been counseling people through the years and there's a percentage of them, they have only one mission now. And that's to inflict pain upon their spouse. Because they feel they've been wronged. I'm now going to pay them back. And you're actually going to take this information and butcher them. And not only that, then people are going to use you as an example that will prove why this teaching is not of God and why it's not right. You will be the one who will discredit my ministry. And you will undermine what I'm seeking to do because I cried all those years with my mom and dad in conflict and I'm trying to bring healing and you will discredit this message. So the only thing I can do is appeal to you, please, just go quiet. Just don't say anything anymore. But back to the sexual thing, this medical doctor was not a believer, his wife was, and the Lord was beginning to speak to her because she wanted to connect with her husband emotionally. She wanted to connect spiritually. And he wanted to be sexual with her, but she refused sex because not until he talks to me, not until he meets my needs, until he starts loving me, am I going to respond to him sexually. But the Lord began to speak to her because she was a believer. And the Lord said, I want you to minister to him. I want you to be sexually intimate with him. No, Lord. He's got to meet my needs first. Then I'll respond. I want you to minister to him. Stop depriving one of him except by agreement. He's got a dollar sign in his chest. He's good looking. All the women, all the nurses are coming on to him. He's making big time money. You need to understand he's vulnerable. And over a period of time, she fought the Lord, but finally she then said, and she told me, said, I just relinquished. So she said, I began to minister to my husband. I sought to honor him by meeting a need that he has that I don't have. He had a need for sexual release in a way that I didn't. So I began to minister to him. And then she said, listen to me. We lay there in bed and he wouldn't shut up. The way you get to a woman's body is by touching her spirit authentically. The way you get to a man's spirit is by touching his body authentically. Meeting a need in a genuine way, and his spirit will melt. Who moves first? The one who sees himself or herself as the most mature. I'm going to tell you, he's visually oriented. Think of it when you step out of the shower and he's there.
He just looks at you.
Just being biblical, Proverbs 5:19. Now reverse it. When he steps out of the shower and you're there. Get back in there. You're getting water. I just waxed that. Get a towel down here. And get a towel around you. You're sick. Just a few male-female differences, folks. In conclusion, C-O-U-P-L-E. Jesus, the lover, is close with us, open with us, understands us. He makes peace with us. He's loyal to us. He esteems us. That's Jesus, the lover. But Christ the Lord, he's the coming conquering king. He's head over all. All authority has been given to him in heaven and earth. He has all insight, knowledge, and wisdom. He will relate to us in his terms, and he's planting the seed that will be born again into his family throughout eternity. That's Christ the Lord, Jesus the lover. Pink and blue together make purple. Together we reflect the image of God. Not wrong, just different. But together we reflect him. Let's close in prayer.
Okay. So, keep it too long, but what do you guys think? Were there any things that stood out as something that you heard that? Like, yeah, that to me, that would feel respectful. Or were there any things that for you ladies that you heard that kind of surprised you a little with that. No, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Just sitting there shoulder to shoulder,
right? The shoulder to shoulder thing, I'll tell you, that's the thing I circled on here is my biggest thing. That, to me, out of all the stuff he said, that was the biggest one. Shoulder to shoulder thing, just being in the room. You know, when you're face to face with your husband, there's a lot of context where your husband loves that, but there's some context where that's just work for a man. He has to think of something, some way to make you feel special. He's got to be careful with his facial expressions because you might wonder what does that mean, and he didn't mean anything. And there's effort, there's work, and it's not naturally energizing to a man the same way it is to a woman. But there's something about, if he's just doing something that he likes doing, and you just want to be by his side, it's incredibly energizing for you when Tracy does that. That to me, that's just a huge thing. Even if we don't, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to go hunting with my dad. We'd walk for hours, don't say a word, you can't make noise, you know, when you're hunting. I love that, you know. I go golfing with someone, I come back, and it's that same conversation. Tracy's like, what'd you talk about? I don't really talk about anything. You're with him for 5.5 hours. Talked about golf. You didn't ask him about, what about his thing with his, you know, his job and his kids and their, like, it wasn't an interrogation, it was golf, you know. I didn't think to ask it. But, you know, for her, she hears that, and to her, it's like, then it was a waste of time. Why even do it? You know, she didn't even talk. So it's hard for women to understand, but there's something about just, I love you so much, I just want to be next to you. Even if you're not paying attention to me, is just an incredible thing for a man. So.
In respect to that, is it different if he's doing something he enjoys versus something he has to do? Okay, like if he has to paint a room and you're just watching him, opposed to, say, sitting in the golf cart while he plays his game?
I think if you're watching him do something, you know, I guess out of those two, the thing that would be more energizing to me is if Tracy wanted to ride in a golf cart with me and watch me. But the first thing, I wouldn't discount the first thing either. You know, when I just have to do a task, you know, not long ago I was working on my car, just trying to get something fixed on my car. Tracy just came out there and she was with me. And I just loved it. We didn't have any great conversation or anything. It was just great having her out there. So.
You know, that kind of shocks me because sometimes I'll go in to his office and I'll start to try to talk and he's distracted. And I'll say, well, I'll leave you to your work. I'm going to, no, stay. Yeah. And it's like, why do you want me to stay? You're just ignoring me.
Yeah.
but he does. And I didn't really understand some of that till I recently rearranged our living room, and I put the couches long ways, so we're literally sitting side by side, and saw what a difference just being in the same room, because I'll go bring some of my work upstairs if he's up there. And it was shocking to me one day, because he did start just yakking away, and then he was saying, "You're not paying attention." I'm like, I'm working. And when he was sitting there saying that, I was kind of stunned because I was like, it does happen.
It does. I'll tell you one other thing that I circled was the thing where the woman went to his work and it's some older man saying yes, sir, to his husband, and then his secretary is admiring him and everything. And I think that's when he wrote that, when he told the women to write that note, he says, sign it with all my respect. And we said last time, at least for Tim and I, that just the word respect, that to me, that wouldn't mean that much. But then the last part, the one who admires you, to me, that would mean a lot. And different words mean different things to different people, so I don't know what it's like for you guys and everything. But for me, the admiring thing, if Tracy's impressed with something that I do, or she admires me, looks up to me, that's very, very energizing to me. And there's something that some John MacArthur's wife said to Tracy once, she said, well, she said to a group of women, Tracy was there, but she said, make sure you're your husband's biggest fan. If you're not your husband's biggest fan in the church, then some other woman in the church is. And it puts him at risk, because that's what his heart will respond to. So just being impressed with him, being impressed with the fact that he handles the pressure of having to earn an income, support family. You know.
Something that a relationship that was important to me, I didn't realize it was a shoulder to shoulder, but it's true, that's good. But the insight, it's always bothered me that in times when, you know, I've done analyzation and counseling, and Ruth doesn't really hear me, but then she goes and some other guy says something, and it's the same thing I said for the last 2 months, but all of a sudden, that's brilliant. And it's like, I just, like, where was I? Whereas if I went forward to, you know, if I, she came to me and I, well, I don't really know, let's talk to that. That doesn't bother me at all, because then it's, okay, I'm directing, I need to.
Yeah, and I think the reason that happens, and he mentioned a little bit of this in the previous one, but so we'll see it next time. But you know, we've all had this. Wife comes to the husband with a problem. Husband kicks into solution mode. She says, "Don't try and fix me," and all that. And the reason is, she's coming for sympathy and compassion. That's what she wants. Compassion. She wants this compassion. She doesn't want a solution necessarily, or not right away. Maybe she does want the solution. But first, she wants the compassion. You know, if your little kid it falls on his bike and he's got compound fracture, bone sticking out, and you say, "Oh, I know the solution to that. You just set that thing, wrap it up, and that'll be, you know, that's a solution." He's not necessarily concerned. I mean, he does want the solution, but he wants a little sympathy, right? And that's the way our wives are when they come to us. I think that one of the things we as men need to make sure we do is always start with the sympathy. What he recommends is ask your wife, "Are you looking for a solution right now, or you just want to talk to me?" And I would recommend, I wouldn't even ask that. I would just always start with sympathy. You can't lose with sympathy. She comes with a problem. Identify with what it's like to be in her shoes. Show some sympathy. Don't talk about a solution yet. Do that first, and then from there, move to the solution. What's that?
Wait for her to ask.
For the solution?
Yeah.
Because if she doesn't want any sympathy, she's just looking for a solution. She'll say, like, all right, tell me. And I think then, when that happens, it is good for wives to when that sort of thing happens, it's usually because I wanted sympathy. He didn't give me sympathy. He gave me an unloving response. She goes to the other man. She's not looking for sympathy. She actually is looking for a solution. And so she doesn't realize that she missed it. So ladies, you know, appreciate your husband's ability to do that. God did make men with some problem-solving kinds of ways of thinking that are different from yours that are helpful to you. And, you know, if you can admire that in him, that's a good thing. Well, I also really like the thing you said about work, and this last thing I'll mention. Appreciating his work. It is a heavy, very heavy burden to have to work. You know, I think a lot of women don't realize that it is a relentless burden to look out into the future and say, from now until I die, I have to find a way to feed my family. And it's not easy in this economy, you know, necessarily. And you lose your job, and it can be. I mean, it can be a major stress, and to have to just have the weight of that responsibility on you, for a woman to not have to have that weight, is a great gift. And to appreciate the fact that your husband does. And the reason I mention it is because there's a lot of wives who actually resent their husband's job. Because instead of being impressed with him for what he's capable of doing at that job, like you were when you first met him, it's you start to just see his job as the thing that takes him away. It takes all his time and all his energy away from you and the kids all the time. It's always taking him away. You start to almost resent his job And in order to do the impressive things that he does at work, sometimes he has to stay there till 9 p.m. He comes home late, and you're angry, not appreciating the fact that he didn't stay till 9, work until 9 p.m. because he enjoyed it. He's trying to be successful in his job and support the family and do what needs to be done and be good at what he does. It sometimes requires sacrifices, and for him to do that for you and then come home and be you'd be upset with him for it is not very energetic.
That helps me understand what it is.
All right. Well, I just urge you to talk about this because everybody's different. Men are all different. There's some of us men. Some of you guys might think, okay, the shoulder-to-shoulder thing. No, that doesn't do anything for me, really. You know, or whatever. It's just don't try to force fit yourself into any of these things. Just kick out whatever it is that's helpful, and say, yeah, that piece. That's, And then remember the thing we started with. These aren't the solutions. The solution is humility. You humble yourselves with each other, your problems will be solved. This just helps a little bit at the margin once you humble yourself. All right. Well, let me close the word prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the ways that you've designed us and the differences and even the things that have made us mad, Lord, that we realize your wisdom in those things, and we're just getting a glimpse of those in this evening. There's thousands of other points of wisdom and ways that you've made us different that don't occur to us naturally, but we know we rejoice if we saw your wisdom behind it. So we trust you in that. Lord, help the wives in this room to relearn how to admire their husbands. Make us, as men, worthy of that. Make us men of honor. We pray this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.